Richard's the life and soul of this match singles night. Confident, charming. I can see why he sets some hearts racing, but my eye's on Matt. Shy, super cute and just a little awkward. But that's exactly what I like about him.
Meet other singles at our match events. Join Match Free today. 18 and over. Additional fees and subscriptions apply. See match.com for details.
Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday. We put it up about noon Mountain Time, and we try to bring you just a little bit different of an insight, of an outlook on the world of sports than you get anywhere else. Try to apply some actual, you know, common sense into our sports takes that we have here. You can download, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or pretty much anywhere podcasts are hosted. You can find it pretty much anywhere. Or if you'd like to make it real, real easy for you, head over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. I put up some new articles every single week, put up a few different takes, put up a few, maybe a satire article, but I always put the link to the podcast right there on our website. If you would like to just go listen and check it out there, you always can do that. If you want to contact the show, got a question, got a comment, got anything that you would like to give to the show here, anything you would like to say, email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. You can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. And you can also like us on Facebook. We do have a Facebook page over there. And you know our posts on Facebook are going to be better than that guy you used to work with posting his racial rants, or, I don't know, your creepy uncle posting about the hot chicks he saw at Walmart today. So feel free to, you know, like us over on Facebook, spice up that Facebook feed just a little bit. Today on the show, got a couple things that we've got to get to. I want to talk some NFL. Got some NFL stories I want to touch on a little bit, and something that you might not be looking at quite this way. You might have seen that Sports Illustrated named their Sports Person of the Year. I want to talk about that just a little bit. And did you know, and this might come as a genuine shock to you, you might be surprised when you hear this. Did you know there are some NBA teams playing well that are not named the Golden State Warriors? I know. I'll let you sit down after you hear that, because you probably didn't know that. Because, you know, you don't hear about any of them. The only thing we've heard all season long is we've heard about Golden State. We've heard about Kobe Bryant. And outside of that, we're not really hearing much else about anybody else. That's pretty much it. Also, I'm going to give you a viewer's guide to the college football bowls. There are so many college football bowl games. There's too many for you to watch. There's too many for you to sit there and say, well, I'm going to watch every single one of them and just hope for the best. I'll give you a few games that I would keep an eye on. At least know where they're at. And I'll even tell you where they're going to be, when they're going to be played. You can have an idea. Hey, this night I want to make sure I kind of check in. Give you a couple bowl games that you're actually going to want to tune into. And as usual, I have a Daily Dose top five that you are not going to want to miss today, with, of course, it being here in the holiday season, you know it's got a little bit of holiday flavor that you're going to want to check out. A few things coming out in the world of breaking news that I want to discuss before we jump in fully. You might have saw yesterday, New England Patriots running back LeGarrette Blount is going to miss the remainder of the season because he's got a left hip injury. And he suffered the injury in Sunday night's game against the Houston Texans. That is just the latest prominent player with the Patriots to go down with a season-ending injury. Blount so far in the season has 703 yards and 6 touchdowns. He was pretty key in last year's Super Bowl run. I know they don't run the ball a whole lot, but I want to talk a little bit here in just a few minutes about the New England Patriots and how that affects them. Or does that affect them? Maybe it doesn't affect them at all. Did you notice this? It's kind of gone under the radar just a little bit. You might not have noticed that Team USA soccer star Abby Wambach, all-time leading scorer in international play, is going to be facing China today in an international game down in New Orleans. That is her final game. Abby Wambach retiring. She's done. Two-time Olympic gold medalist. She was a FIFA World Cup champion, 6-time winner, U.S. Soccer Athlete of the Year. I know on the female side, sometimes we don't notice some of those athletes quite as much. Abby Wambach was a phenomenal player, one of the greatest female soccer players ever. She is giving it up after today. she is going to be done. You also might have saw this. After missing his team's first 25 games of the season, speaking of those Golden State Warriors, their head coach Steve Kerr plans to increase his workload during their upcoming five-game homestand, hoping that maybe he can get back. If you don't know the story, Steve Kerr had back surgery in the offseason. He was leaking spinal fluid. That doesn't sound good to me. He was leaking spinal fluid. Had the back surgery, has been trying to come back, but up until this time, Luke Walton has actually been coaching them. Here's one side note that I don't know if you know. You might not know this. Maybe you do. I have a smart audience. I know that. Through those first 25 games, the Golden State Warriors, of course, are 24-1. You know who gets credit for those games? Steve Kerr. You would think as the assistant, Luke Walton would get a little bit of credit for those. Nope. He doesn't get credit at all for those. As a head coach, Luke Walton is 0-0. I know, just kind of a odd little side note wanted to throw out there. We'll see if Kerr can get himself ready. He says that he's going to start trying to up his workload so that he can hopefully start getting back into the swing of things and get going. I still look at that and say, that is a major, major surgery to come back from. That's not anything small to come back from. I don't know. We'll keep an eye on Steve Kerr and see if he can come back. I do think it is imperative at some point for him to get back to this team if they really are going to make that championship run. I don't think you can make that run with a you know, interim assistant fill-in head coach. I think they'll need Steve Kerr at some point. And the biggest news of the day is probably college basketball. Wisconsin head coach Bo Ryan announced last night that he is retiring effective immediately. Now, if you aren't familiar with this story, going into the season, Bo Ryan said he was going to retire. This is it. This is my last year. He spoke to his AD, Barry Alvarez. He spoke to the administrative staff out at Wisconsin. He spoke to his family, everybody, and said, hey, this is it. This is my last year. Now, Ryan coached Wisconsin to a school record 36 wins last year. They went to the national championship against Duke. Wisconsin is 7-5 this year. You're going to start hearing people that are going to start saying, well, how could Bo Ryan quit on those kids? That's just wrong. Bo Ryan just quit on those kids. That's not fair that he just quit on them. If it was a kid and he quit midseason, everyone would be out on that kid and saying, you know, he's a quitter, he's this, he's that. A few things about this. One, Bo Ryan has earned the right to do whatever he wants to. I believe in their history prior to Bo Ryan, I think Wisconsin had 4 20-win seasons. Since Bo Ryan got there, they've had 12. So he has the right to do whatever he wants. But here's the thing that I want you to keep in mind, and you might not hear this through the national media at all. He is going to turn the team over to his longtime assistant, Greg Gard. Now, here's the story that you might not hear. I don't know. We'll see how the media plays this. But I think, see, Gard's father was diagnosed with cancer in the spring, and he died in the fall. And so because of the demands on Gard's time, Gard couldn't really be with the team as much as he wanted. Here's my opinion. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Bo Ryan wanted to retire last year at the end of the year. And then when all this stuff happened with Gard's father, Bo Ryan agreed to stay on to help him out and said, hey, once you're back full time, once you get all the way back in, then I'll retire. But I don't think his heart was in it this year. And here's the thing, and I speak from experience on this, having coached, granted, at a smaller level. It was at a high school level. It was a different level. I understand that. But coaching as a life, as a career, is a tough business. People ask me now. People ask me. I've had people just in the last few weeks, I don't know why. I've had people ask me, why'd you stop coaching? You're a good coach. Why'd you stop coaching? Because it's so demanding. It kills you. You literally eat, breathe, think, sleep. Everything you do is coaching. And rarely are you ever living in the moment. You're always looking at the next thing. And what can we learn? And how can we get better? And what can I do with this kid? And how do I deal with this parent? And what do I do with this administrator? It's a constant grind. Now think of being in that constant grind and you're all in and you're totally invested. Okay, it's tough. Think of being in that constant grind and you're not fully invested. You know, I kind of don't want to be here. I don't think Bo Ryan wanted to be there this year. I think he did it as a favor to his assistant coach. I'll be there. I'll help you. But I'm not fully invested in this. I'm kind of done. Bo Ryan retires with the fourth longest active tournament streak. He had a phenomenal run. Went to the tournament 14 straight seasons at Wisconsin. It's not like he's at this basketball factory. He's at Wisconsin. Pretty amazing run by Bo Ryan up there. I can tell you from my personal experience with Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan ran an offense that they used to call, well, they call it, I don't know, a number of different things, but we called it the swing offense. And the basic swing offense that we would kind of run, it kind of almost had this, it was a continuity kind of offense. You would swing the ball on one side, you would reverse guys back through, take up some time off the clock, make defenders, make sure there's good spacing within this offense. The Bo Ryan swing offense was something that we used quite a bit. It was a lot of hard cuts and a lot of good physical basketball. Bo Ryan was a phenomenal coach. Not always the nicest guy, not always the cuddliest guy. I'll be honest. I would imagine that with his retirement, he's probably going to spend some time this holiday season stealing presents from the Who's in Whoville, but a phenomenal coach. College basketball will miss a coach like Bo Ryan. Let's jump in. Speaking of people that are not that cuddly, speaking of people that are sometimes just a little bit prickly at times, did you see that Sports Illustrated recently named their sportsperson of 2015? Now, I don't know about you, but with me growing up, Sports Illustrated was like a big thing to me. Like, I can remember when I got home from school on, I think it was on Thursdays, I would run out to the mailbox and get my Sports Illustrated. And no, not just for the swimsuit issue, I went out there and got it every single week. Because Sports Illustrated, you know, whether it was, you know, their basketball coverage or, I mean, that's just some phenomenal writers. Those were some of the writers that I remember reading as a kid that I would, even to this day, probably pattern some of my writing after. Sports Illustrated was the publication that I wanted to read every single week. I still can look back on old Sports Illustrated and I still kind of remember the pictures or the articles or some of the things that were written in that magazine. They recently released their Sports Person of the Year for 2015. Some of the past winners, of course, you remember, Michael Jordan, Joe Montana, Tiger Woods. This year, now some of this, let's be honest, is a little bit political. Some of this is, let's try to be a little bit clever with who we award it to. But this year, Sports Illustrated named tennis great Serena Williams as their Sports Person of the Year for 2015. Serena edged out racehorse American Pharoah and Warriors guard Stephen Curry. But, you know, there are many, many people right now who are up in arms over Williams winning it. Let's be honest. Like we talked about with Bo Ryan, Serena Williams has a little bit of kind of that Kobe Bryant to her. She kind of comes off sometimes as being about as cuddly as like a cactus at times. We saw her yell at the ball judge, threatening to do things with a tennis ball to this ball judge that physically probably wouldn't be that pleasant. We've seen Serena sometimes does not like always dealing with the media. She can be a little bit tough to deal with. But understand this. She truly is one of the most underrated athletes of this generation. And some of it is because she plays tennis. Let's be honest. We don't care that much about tennis. In 2015, Serena played 56 matches. She won 53 of them. Now, think about in any other sport. If you played 56 football games or basketball games and you won 53 of them, we'd be blowing you up. Some of that is tennis. As a professional player, she is 737 and 123 in her career. She has won 86% of her matches. She has 69 titles on her resume. Now, there are a couple people you can throw in there. Maybe Steffi Graf, maybe Martina Navratilova. I would say, kind of pound for pound, Serena Williams is probably the greatest female tennis player to ever walk the planet. And we don't talk about her that much. We really don't. But apparently, there's a pretty big backlash against Serena Williams winning this award. Because in the Sports Illustrated online poll, they did an online poll, and SI's website posted this poll of who do you think should win the Sports Person of the Year. Now, I will be completely transparent. I will tell you, for me, I would vote for Steph Curry. Because not only is dude like 6'3 and like a buck 25 dripping wet, he's changing the game. He's changing the way we look at basketball. He's changing the way kids are playing basketball out on their playgrounds right now. And it's not because he's bigger, stronger, faster. It's because he's kind of trickier. Because he's put in his time on the court. Because he really, really works on his skills. So if it were my vote, I probably vote for Steph Curry. That's just me. But when they did the online vote, the winner by a landslide, not even close, was the first Triple Crown winner we've had in 37 years. American Pharoah won in a landslide. I mean, first Triple Crown. I don't remember the last Triple Crown. I mean, I guess that was history. That was amazing. So the public votes for American Pharoah. Here's my only problem. And now you're even hearing some people, hey, American Pharoah should have got that. Sports Illustrated is just trying to be edgy. They're just trying to give it to a female, trying to give it to an African-American female. All these excuses, nonsense. I'm okay with Serena getting it. I told you how I would vote. I'm good with Serena getting it, though. But now the public is pushing that this American Pharoah, American Pharoah did something historical. American Pharoah did something that we haven't seen in so long, and did it in such a dominating way. There's only one problem. And you know me. You know me. You know here on the Daily Dose, we hate to point out these little snags in logic sometimes. But I'm going to point this out. I'm going to have to bring this up. I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to. American Pharoah is a horse, not a person. And I know that, remember back in the day, ESPN thought it was cute a few years ago when they did the greatest athletes of all time and they voted Secretariat on their greatest athletes of all time list. It's not cute. Not only did Secretariat make the list, they were like number 3. They were ahead of some of the greatest athletes of all time. It's not cute. It's not clever. It's stupid. I understand that American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. I get it. And you know what? If I'm handing out an award for greatest horse racing horse this year, then by all means, yes, give it to American Pharoah. But stop telling me this horse is an athlete. This horse can't even get to the track without a human getting him there. It's so ridiculous. If that's the case, then I bet I can find like a penguin or something to be an Olympic swimmer. And I'm sure we can find like a silverback ape that can be our weightlifting champion. And I bet somewhere around in a zoo or somewhere, we can probably find like a giraffe that can lead the NBA in block shots. Get out of here. This is athletics. This isn't the circus. Get out of here with this nonsense, American Pharoah sports person. American Pharoah doesn't even choose to be a racehorse. American Pharoah is bred and then is trained by other people to be a racehorse. American Pharoah is a racehorse whether he wants to be or whether he doesn't. He's kind of like, Tiger Woods or Todd Marinovich. Anyways, I've had enough. Stop telling me about horses being athletes. Horses aren't athletes. When the horse can get in the car and drive themselves to the game, then we can talk about. Get out of here with that garbage. Anyways, let's jump over to the NBA. I told you before, talked a little bit about the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors finally dropped a game. They lost on Sunday to the Milwaukee Bucks. Kind of odd. Milwaukee? Really? Milwaukee, it's not like I picked Milwaukee to be improved this year, maybe make the playoffs. They haven't looked very good this year, but any given night, I guess. The Warriors have won 24 games in a row this year. Started off the season just this amazing, amazing run. Now, I'll be honest, I do still have some concerns about this team. And if I were the guy making the decisions with the Golden State Warriors, I would be concerned about, tiring this team out. They're playing amazing basketball, don't get me wrong. But don't burn out too early. You don't win any gold balls in December. You don't win any of that stuff in November. You win that stuff clear, almost out in the summer, as long as these seasons are. Despite as great as the Warriors have played, I told you before, there are actually some teams that are playing pretty well. Let me give you a couple teams that you might want to start keeping an eye on. Because my pick to win it all, and I'll be honest, I still feel okay about this pick. The San Antonio Spurs are 20-5, and you know, they're starting to learn how to play together a little bit. They are currently the best defensive team in the league. They're allowing just 87.9 points a game. And here's the key. Because we know what they're going to do every year, and yes, we know they're boring, and we know blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing. You know, they signed free agent LaMarcus Aldridge in the offseason. LaMarcus Aldridge is starting to get a little more comfortable. For October, Aldridge was getting 10 points a game, 7-8 rebounds a game. In November, he was up to 16 points a game, 8 or 9 rebounds a game. In December, he's up to 17 points a game, 7 or 8 rebounds a game. See, the thing is, Aldridge is starting to figure out how to play with these guys. That is very, very dangerous for the rest of the league. San Antonio Spurs are pretty good. San Antonio Spurs are pretty good. Did you hear Spurs coach Greg Popovich go all grumpy old man on us last week? He said, Greg Popovich, I love Pop. I think he's probably the best coach in the NBA, but he is a grumpy old man sometimes. He said he'll never embrace the three-point shot. I just don't think it's basketball. It's kind of like a circus kind of thing. Why don't we just have a five-point shot, or how about a seven-point shot? Really? Really? Well, how about this, Greg? How about we just make every shot worth 1 point? Doesn't matter where it's from, it's worth 1 point. And we'll have games in like the 20s and the 30s, and it'll be like watching baseball. Everyone can take a nap, and no one will care about it. Also, like baseball. You know what I think? And I don't know this for a fact, but you know what I think? I think Greg Popovich is taking kind of a shot at Golden State. Because I think Greg Popovich looks at the Golden State Warriors. Remember, they didn't face each other in the playoffs last year. I think he looks at them and he says, they kind of are like a circus. They're out there with their trick shots, and they're out there running around and being cute. But when it comes playoff time, and you got to play with us, you're not going to get all those easy transition points. And you're not going to get all those uncontested shots because, like morons, we help from the ball side instead of helping from the weak side. We're not. That doesn't happen. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, I saw this the other night. And I don't want to like get, you know, all technical on this. But like Steph Curry is down in the corner. And his defender is playing out on him. His defender is checked out on him, is covering. The ball is at the top of the key. I think Klay Thompson had it. And Klay Thompson kind of drives toward the corner, and then he's looking to drive either for the layup or to the kick to Steph Curry. Steph Curry's defender, and I can't place who the defender was for Boston, but Steph Curry's defender jumps inside from the ball side, not from the away side, from the ball side. He jumps back to help against the ball away from Steph Curry. I want you to process that in your mind for a second. I'm going to run away from one of the greatest shooters maybe ever and stop Klay Thompson on the drive when, let's be honest, Klay Thompson probably is going to miss anyway. That's sometimes, I think, how Greg Popovich looks at the rest of the NBA, like, you guys are that stupid? Because when we play Golden State, we're not going to be that stupid. We're going to make Steph Curry have to hit that shot with a hand in his face. I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying, I think that's how Pop looks at this. Now, the funny thing, you know, Pop taking a shot like that, I think Pop is kind of saying he thinks Golden State's soft. Ooh, there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse in athletics than being called soft. There's nothing worse in basketball than being called soft. But I think that Pop is kind of calling them soft. Because believe me, Greg Popovich understands the value of the three-point shot. He might gripe about it and go grumpy old man and tell whoever the sideline reporter is, get off my lawn or whatever it might be. But Pop understands the value of the three-point shot, believe me. Here's a quick side note for you. I want you to think about this. Again, I have an intelligent audience. Best part of doing this job. I have an intelligent audience. Do you know who right now is leading the NBA in three-point shooting percentage? by person. Best shooting percentage in the NBA from the three-point arc is who right now? I'll let you think about that. Now, you might be sitting there saying, oh, it's probably Steph Curry. It's probably the guy we just talked about. It's probably the guy that Boston sagged off of in help on. No, Steph Curry is shooting the lights out. Steph Curry is shooting 458, almost 46% from three-point line. He's not leading the league, though. Who else you got? You might think of the Clippers' J.J. Redick, one of the deadliest shooters in the league. J.J. is actually shooting an even 460. He's shooting 46% from three-point range. No, it's not. It's not J.J. Redick. And no, John, it's not Kobe Bryant. Just stop bringing up Kobe Bryant. They're talking about building this Kobe Bryant statue out in front of the Staples Center. They had to make that statue out of bricks. No, it's not Kobe. It is the San Antonio Spurs' Kawhi Leonard, who is shooting 489 from three-point range. Almost 49%. Half the time he throws up a three, it splashes in. That is an insane percentage. Don't tell me Greg Popovich doesn't understand the value of good three-point shooting. They are more selective with it, but he understands how important it is. You know, Kawhi Leonard, he's kind of turning in. I said it last year. He's kind of turning into Scottie Pippen. I mean, what can't dude do? Now he's got this three-point shot. We know he can beat you off the bounce. We know he can attack and get into the paint and cause problems. He can rebound. We know what a good, long, lean defender he is. Keep an eye on the San Antonio Spurs and Kawhi Leonard because they are quietly playing some of the best basketball in the NBA. Other team I want you to keep an eye on. And when I say this, you're going to roll your eyes and you're going to say, yeah, crazy. You're crazy. They're not going to be one of the big dogs defending it at the end. Better keep an eye on the Oklahoma City Thunder. I know what you're thinking. Yes, Oklahoma City can score. They've got Durant. They've got Westbrook. They don't have a huge bench. For the record, and I'm not a huge Russell Westbrook fan, but that dude might be the most athletic guy in the NBA. He seriously looks like he has springs in his shoes. But here's what I want you to keep in mind with Oklahoma City. Under new head coach Billy Donovan, they're starting to play some defense. It's not huge, and if you watch them early in the season, it didn't look very good. But here's something I want you to keep in mind. Last year, under Scottie Brooks, the Oklahoma City Thunder allowed about 102 points a game. Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. They don't play much defense. And they started off this season allowing 105 points per game. So they actually got a little bit worse. But in their past 10 games, the Thunder are allowing just 94 points per game. Now that might be an aberration. That might be, well, they played 10 bad teams. They played this. They just got hot at the right time defensively, and it's not really, maybe. But I think one thing that is always lost with Billy Donovan when he came over from Florida is that his Florida teams played very intelligent defense. You look at those teams that he had down at Florida with Al Horford and obviously Joakim Noah and some of the big guys he had, Chris Richard and that kind of groups. But people forget, everyone always kind of said, well, yeah, Florida, they're pressing and they're trapping. That wasn't what they did. That wasn't what they did at all. They played half-court defense, and they contested every single jump shot, but every single shot you took was a jump shot. They forced you to shoot from outside, and they didn't give you second-chance opportunities. That is high-percentage defensive basketball, and that's what Oklahoma City is starting to do. If Oklahoma City keeps that trend going with good defense, we know they can score. We know they can manufacture points with Durant and Westbrook. If they start playing defense and they start to figure that side of it out, you better look out. Because that's a dangerous, dangerous team. Let's shift over to the NFL. You know, this might sound kind of weird, but the New England Patriots had a pretty good weekend. I mean, they got Rob Gronkowski back. They blew out the Houston Texans in a game that some experts were talking about. Hey, Houston might beat them. I still don't have any faith in Houston. Maybe it was hard knocks for me. I don't know. But when I watch Houston, I still think of them kind of just being morons and quarterbacks. Yes, Hoyer's played well lately, but I don't buy Houston. But, you know, here's the thing for New England. after the Houston game, they had the top two teams ahead of them. Because remember, they were the number one seed. When they lost to the Broncos, they dropped back to the number three seed. The two teams ahead of them in the AFC playoff standings lost. First, the Cincinnati Bengals lost their quarterback Andy Dalton to a fractured thumb. And quick side note, did you see backup quarterback AJ McCarron? Dude is the most confident backup quarterback ever. They went and talked to him after the game. And instead of just going with the typical, hey, you know, Andy went down with thumb injury, I'm going to do my best to step in and kind of, you know, just play as well as I can until he can come back. And hey, I know whose job it is. I'm just going to try to get in there, let our defense do what they can do, and spread the ball without making any mistakes. No. That's not what A.J. McCarron said. A.J. McCarron didn't even let Dalton's soulless body get cold before he was dropping the, well, hey, this is how Tom Brady got started. Because, you know, Drew Bledsoe got hurt and Tom Brady stepped in and he just took over and they just blew up. Okay, first off, A.J., I don't think an Alabama quarterback has won an NFL regular season game since like the 70s. Second off, you're not Tom Brady. And third off, you're not Tom Brady. Anyways, after Cincinnati gets trounced by Pittsburgh, dropping them out of that number one seed, the Denver Broncos then poop right in their bathwater by losing to the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. The Broncos lost to the Raiders despite outgaining the Raiders by nearly 200 yards. The Oakland Raiders had negative 12 yards in the first half. If you hold anybody to a negative 12 yards, you ought to win that game. But the Broncos turned it over, and they were unable to protect their quarterback. Now, doesn't that sound like that should have been kind of the blueprint for how you beat the Raiders? Well, yeah, they turned it over too much, and they couldn't protect their young quarterback. No, it was the Broncos doing that. Denver made crucial mistakes down the stretch in that game. Couldn't catch a pass. Demaryius Thomas, man, dude is in his own head. Just can't seem to connect with a pass right now. He can't catch it. And you know he's just overthinking it. You know he's just squeezing it so hard that it slips out. But Demaryius Thomas is struggling right now. And I'll say this about the Denver Broncos. If you saw the game against the Raiders, Khalil Mack, outside linebacker for the Raiders, was phenomenal. He totally dominated, whether it was Ryan Harris on one side of the Broncos offensive line or it was Michael Schofield on the other side of the Broncos offensive line. He completely dominated them. No one could stay in front of him. Didn't help that both of them were wearing roller skates that day. That probably, you know, inhibited their option of staying in front of him too much. But the strange thing for me was you have Gary Kubiak and you have Rick Dennison, the offensive coordinator. They couldn't come up with the idea that maybe you want to bring in Virgil Green, one of the best blocking tight ends, to go to one side or the other and chip at Khalil Mack. Virgil Green played 12 snaps in that game. 12. 12 snaps more than I played in that game. That tells me that your coaching staff didn't do a real great job of being prepared for the Oakland Raiders. You did a pretty poor job of adjusting. And in the first half, we saw Denver pretty much dominating the Raiders, but all they could manufacture were field goals. That'll get you beat. But you know what also gets you beat is when in the second half, the Raiders make adjustments, and the Broncos never do make adjustments. They never did adjust to what the Raiders had done. They got out-coached a little bit. And more importantly, something you can never, ever do, and I don't care what sport it is. I don't care if it's basketball, it's football. You can't let one guy completely destroy your game plan. And that's exactly what the Denver Broncos did on Sunday. They allowed Khalil Mack to completely destroy their game plan. You have to look at that and say, hey, we're going to take Mack out of this game. I don't care if we have to send three people at him. Somebody else has to beat us. We can't let him. He had seven hits on the quarterback. The whole team had eight. The Raiders finished the game with five sacks on Brock Osweiler. Mack had all five. You let one guy destroy your game plan completely? You let one guy beat 11? That doesn't make much sense to me. Anyways, back to the Patriots. Patriots had a pretty good week. They get Gronkowski back. They beat the Texans. Cincinnati falls. The Broncos fall. They're right back into the number one spot. They went from 3-1 in about 6 hours. That was kind of nice. They are back to the number one seed in the AFC, and the road to the Super Bowl is going through Foxborough again. Just when we kind of thought, maybe we can get rid of them. Nope. They're like Jason Voorhees. They're just right back. Here is one word of caution, though, for the Patriots. And no, I'm not talking about them losing LeGarrette Blount. We talked about that earlier in the show. They lost LeGarrette Blount to that hip injury yesterday. But the Patriots, you know, they have proven they're capable of just plugging in a new, whether it's a wide receiver or a tight end or a running back or whatever it might be, they can just continue on. That doesn't seem to affect them very much. The thing that I would worry about a lot more, and I know they're going to say, no, we're fine. I'd start worrying about that offensive line because they have lost some people on the offensive line. And that offensive line is allowing Tom Brady to get hit again and again every single week. Do you realize this? Do you realize that Tom Brady has been hit 35 times? Wait. I'm not done yet. Not in the season. He's been hit close to 90 times in the season. He's been hit 35 times in the past 4 games. I've got news for you. Here's the Patriots' remaining schedule. Titans, okay, the Titans should be relegated. The Titans should like be relegated down to like the Big Ten. At the New York Jets. At the Miami Dolphins. I realize both of those teams have their flaws, and I realize both those teams have their issues. I also realize both of those teams would like nothing more than to hit Tom Brady again and again and again. And both of those teams, Jets and Dolphins, are playing for any hope of a playoff life that they have. The Jets actually have a chance. The Dolphins don't. But do you think they're not going to come after Tom Brady with everything they have? Again, and now with LeGarrette Blount out, they may actually run less. They weren't running before. Now, Brady has to throw even more? I'd start being a little bit concerned. I know Patriot fan. I know Patriot fan is afraid of nothing, and they know they're just going to traipse right through to the Super Bowl and just win another Super Bowl, and it's just another testament to Brady and Belichick and all that is good and fair in this world. Be careful, Patriots fan, because that offensive line is not very good. You know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the Carolina Panthers are going 16-0. I'm looking at their remaining schedule, and they've got, okay, they're at Giants this next week. Then they are at Falcons, speaking of teams that are genuinely horrible. Remember when the Falcons were like 6-0? Remember the Falcons were like 6-0? And I had said, be careful with the Falcons, because I still don't trust that defense. The Falcons have gone from 6-0 to not even being a contender for a wild card in a horrible side of the conference. Wow, Falcons. I mean, then the Carolina Panthers finish out at home against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Buccaneers are scrappy, but Buccaneers aren't great. Now you're going to start hearing how the Carolina Panthers haven't beaten anyone. And they haven't, let's be honest. They beat the Seahawks back in October when Seattle was really, really struggling. They beat the Packers just a few weeks ago. The Packers are still struggling, so I guess they're right in that boat. But they are the only two teams that even have a winning record. They're the only two teams that are even above 500. So you can talk about, Carolina hasn't played anyone. No, you're right. You're right. They haven't played anybody. You know who else only beat two teams with winning records? The 72 Miami Dolphins. Yeah, you know, the only team that ever had a perfect season ever in the history of ever. Back in 1972, the Dolphins beat only the 8-6 Kansas City Chiefs and the 8-6 New York Giants. Every other team on their schedule was either 500 or significantly below 500, and they played a lot of bad teams that year. But then in the playoffs, they beat the Browns, they beat the Steelers, and they beat the Redskins. And you know, in those three games, they won those three games by a combined 17 points. No one talks about that, though, do they? Nobody's like, well, yeah, the Dolphins went undefeated in that 72 year, but they barely beat any really good teams. No, nobody cares about that. No one's going to remember who Carolina beat if they finished the season undefeated. You know what they're going to remember? That they went undefeated. That's it. So while you might hear the argument, well, yeah, they haven't beaten anybody, one, they don't. It's not like they're a college team and they're picking bad teams. That's who they're scheduled to play. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. Because they might get into the playoffs, they might be healthy, and they're just kind of that team that just kind of ugly finds ways to win. They just grind out wins again and again and again. Keep an eye on the Carolina Panthers. They might be going undefeated this year. Hey, this week in the NFL, I'm going to be honest. There's some really bad games. I mean, really bad games. Okay, let's get through a few games. I'm going to give you a few games to watch. I'm going to give you a few games to keep an eye on in the NFL this week that you just might. First off, Thursday night. Thursday night football this week, we have Tampa Bay at St. Louis. Now, my pick for Buccaneers at Rams is to not watch that game. Like, I don't care what else is on. I don't care if I have to watch a reality show about Real Housewives in, like, Bogota or something. I'm not watching that garbage game. That Tampa Bay-St. Louis game, they should pay the people that have tickets to that game. You should get your money back. That's a horrible game. Here's something to think about. You might not have known this, but now you will because we inform you. Did you realize we have Saturday NFL football this week? Yep. Saturday NFL football. On Saturday, the New York Jets face the Dallas Cowboys. You see how I said that? See how I said that? It sounded like I cared when I said that. Like you heard Jets and Cowboys. Oh, maybe that. No, no, no. I don't care about that game. That's a terrible game. The Jets, I guess they're pushing for a playoff spot. The Cowboys are steaming hot garbage. I don't care about that game. The Jets should throttle them, and that shouldn't even be close. Again, I hate to keep pointing this out, but Matt Castle has a job in the NFL. Matt Castle has a starting quarterback job in the NFL. Do you grasp that concept? My goodness, that's painful. Anyways, don't waste your time on this garbage. Despite the temptation, because you're gonna come home on a Saturday afternoon and you're like, maybe you're out shopping for Christmas or whatever it might be, and you're gonna come home, oh look, there's NFL football. No, there's not. There's not. It looks like NFL football, but it isn't. It's garbage. Don't watch it. Let's see. Are there any games worth watching? Panthers at Giants. It's probably the last chance for Carolina to lose. The Giants, they're scrappy, I guess. I don't know. If I was in Vegas and they asked me to put money on the game, I would say Carolina will win. The Giants will be driving for a winning score already in field goal range, down by two, and on fourth down, Eli Manning will spike the ball. That'll be my pick. Denver, the Broncos go to Pittsburgh this week. Playoff implications in this game, obviously. Steelers are one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now, and the Broncos are still very, very banged up. I don't know if that's getting as much play nationally as, like, you know, the Patriots. Oh, we're all hurt. Yeah, so are the Broncos. Last week, the Broncos had 21 players on their injury report. And it's not like they're backup players. They're starting running back, starting quarterback, both starting safeties. I mean, they've got some guys banged up. So Denver will go to Pittsburgh, and I honestly, I fully expect them to lose that game. I hate to say, I hope that's not the case. I'd be glad to be proven wrong, but I fully expect Denver to go to Pittsburgh and get beat by a Pittsburgh team that right now is just seems to be clicking on at least quite a few of their cylinders. Let's move over to college football. You know, college football has the best regular season of any major sport. Name the major sport. NFL, NHL, NBA, you name it. College football has the best regular season because you literally have to watch every single week because you might not know it at the time, but you might be witnessing what ends up being a playoff game. Don't believe me? If Clemson loses to Louisville back in September, do you think Clemson is playing in the national championship right now? Nope. And they almost did. They almost lost that game. If Michigan State doesn't get that botched punt against Michigan, are they getting into the playoff right now? No. See, in college football, every single week matters. And I know we're going to start getting more and more push because we have the Final Four right now. We need to bump that up to 8 and let's get it to, you know, it'd be really good to be 16. Well, if we got it to 32, let's give everyone an entry into the college football playoff. That takes away how good the regular season is because right now, every week is kind of a playoff game. And the regular season in college football is absolutely phenomenal. Even games that might not look so good, even weeks that might not look so good on paper, you look at the week on paper and you look at the schedule and you go, yeah, there's not that many great games. Those might be playoff games too. Because if a top team gets knocked off, they just might get eliminated. But then in college football, we get to the postseason. And I'm a fan of college football. I love college football. Like I said, every week, it's amazing. But then college football postseason sucks like no other. I mean, the bowl games are meaningless. There's too many bowl games. There are 40 bowl games this year. 4-0. 40. That means 80 teams are making the postseason. Everybody's going to get a ribbon for participation. And you're going to hear these nonsense phrases like, well, we want to preserve the sanctity of the bowl games, which is a lot. It's very, very similar to like when a public official says they want to preserve the sanctity of politics. Yeah, we kind of know where the sanctity of that is. It's kind of all wrapped up in money and you're filthy and we all know it. There's so many bowl games. There's so many bowl games. Now, because of that, let me help you weed through some of the bad games that are going to be out there. Because there's going to be a game. I mean, the games start, I think, on Friday night. We've already got games either Friday or Saturday this week coming up. Bowl games coming. But let me weed through kind of the chaff and get through the actual real games that are worth watching. Now, understand this. At any time, a good bowl game could break out. You might be flipping through the channels from December 19th to January 2nd. At any time, you might be flipping through and hit like ESPN and look at the screen and go, hey, wow, you've got like San Diego State and Cincinnati and it's 36-31 and there's 3 seconds. Yeah, it's possible. But let me try to weed through some of the nonsense and give you a few of the bowl games that you're actually might want to actually tune in for. Might actually be pretty good. This Saturday, December 19th, 1:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on ABC, the Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl is going to be on. Now, when you hear the name Old Royal Purple, yeah, that sounds stupid. But this is an old WAC matchup. And no, I'm not talking slang. Old Western Athletic Conference matchup. BYU versus Utah. These two schools hate each other. This rivalry is called the Holy War. And BYU and Utah, obviously not that far apart. They do hate each other. They're no longer in the same conference. Here's the thing worth watching it for. Both pretty scrappy teams, both pretty tough teams, kind of gritty teams. This will be worth watching though, just to see the BYU kids' faces after they've spent a few days in Sin City as this game is being played in Las Vegas. They're going to be looking out on the field like they've seen ghosts for the past few days. Because you know, if you've been to Vegas, it's impossible to walk through Vegas and not see something that is going to make your eyes bug out of their heads. Now, let's move on to our next bowl game. And by the way, I'm not even giving you the big ones. Like, I can give you the Orange Bowl, Clemson versus Oklahoma, and the Cotton Bowl, Alabama versus Michigan State. We know those are going to be good. We'll do a preview for those here in the next few weeks. I'll make sure to say, I'm looking at the other bowl games. The bowl games no one's talking about. The bowl games no one cares about. Let me give you one more. On Monday, December 28th, 12:30 p.m., Mountain Standard Time again, on ESPN, the Military Bowl. Now, I realize that might not grab your attention. And maybe you're working that day, I don't know. But Pitt versus Navy is actually a pretty good game. Navy has quarterback Keenan Reynolds, who honestly should have been invited to the Heisman ceremony. He runs the option as well as anyone has ever run the option. Navy is another team that probably got slighted a little bit by the ACC. They feel like they should maybe have been in a bigger bowl. These are two teams that run the ball and run, kind of a physical style. Here's the plus about this game. Here's the plus about the Military game, Pitt versus Navy. Why would I watch that? This game could be over in like 2 hours. Like, both these teams aren't going to throw much. This is going to be a quick game. If you want to get in, hey, I got a couple hours, watch this game, Monday, December 28th, you'll see a pretty fast game. The next day, Tuesday, December 29th, at 3:30 on ESPN, the Russell Athletic Bowl featuring North Carolina versus Baylor. Now, Baylor lost their starting quarterback, Seth Russell. And Carolina lost an onside kick to the ACC refs that wanted to make sure they got paid. But both of these teams, Carolina and Baylor can score points in bunches. So if you are someone that likes the offensive mentality, you like that shootout kind of mode, make sure you check out the Russell Athletic Bowl on Tuesday, December 29th. Could be a good one. New Year's Eve, Thursday, December 31st, we're going to have the big games in the afternoon and in the evening. We're going to have the Orange and the Cotton. Those are the big dogs later that day. But at 10 in the morning on New Year's Eve, the Chick-fil-A Bowl will be on ESPN. Chick-fil-A features Houston versus Florida State. Yeah, you might be going, yeah, who cares? But now, in a different season, we could actually have two candidates for the Heisman in this game. Because Florida State running back Dalvin Cook had over 1,600 yards and 18 touchdowns. And Houston quarterback Greg Ward Jr., this dude had 16 passing touchdowns and 19 rushing touchdowns. I'm telling you, Greg Ward is worth watching this game for. It should be Florida State in a blowout, right? It should be. You might not know this. Houston coach Tom Herman, he just re-signed a contract that will keep him there in Houston. He had opportunities to go other places. He thinks he has the resources at Houston to compete with the big dogs. Yeah, good chance to show it. Versus Florida State? I don't know. Keep an eye on this one. I don't know how invested Florida State will be in the Peach Bowl. But Houston, you know, they're going to kind of be into this thing. And Greg Ward and Dalvin Cook, definitely worth watching this game for. Also, January 1st, let's move on to New Year's Day. You went out, you partied the next day or the night before. You woke up with that lampshade on your proverbial head. But the next day on New Year's Day, we've got some pretty decent games. First off, 11 a.m. in the morning. So I'm letting you sleep in. 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, Notre Dame versus Ohio State. You know, Ohio State, once they lost to Michigan State, they really started to play pretty tough. And Notre Dame, they've been pretty tough all year. They've gone through a lot of injuries, but they've been pretty tough all year. I think their quarterback, DeShone Kizer, might end up being a star in the next few years. He just kind of has that look about him. And to be honest, based on Urban Meyer's record, numerous Buckeyes have a chance to be in the penal system a little bit later in their life. So, you know, a couple different things to watch for is what I'm trying to tell you. There's a few different reasons to watch the Fiesta Bowl on New Year's morning. The other game on New Year's Day it'll be after those big dog games. But here's a game that you might not watch otherwise. It's going to be a pretty good game. The Rose Bowl, 3 p.m., January 1st on ESPN. Iowa versus Stanford. Iowa lost that one game all season to Michigan State in that thriller at right at the very end, goal line play. They lose to Michigan State. Stanford, meanwhile, has what I honestly think is probably the most exciting player in the country with Christian McCaffrey. Iowa versus Stanford, that's a pretty nice lineup on New Year's Day. And then I'm going to give you one more game to watch. One more game to watch. Saturday, January 2nd. I know. It's after the big dog games have gone. But Saturday, January 2nd, there's still one more game you can watch. The Valero Alamo Bowl. Why on earth would I watch the Valero Alamo Bowl? Let me tell you. Oregon versus TCU. You know, Oregon was one of the hottest teams down the stretch. They won six games in a row in the Pac-12. And it wasn't like they were beating, you know, the little guys. They beat Stanford and they beat Southern Cal. Their quarterback, Vernon Adams, seemed like he kind of finally figured out how to run the offense, and he got healthy for a change. TCU, they lost their quarterback, Trevon Boykin, to an injury earlier in the season. But I'm telling you right now, keep an eye on Trevon Boykin. He might be the best quarterback in the country, and he's going to be back for this game. So that one actually might be worth watching. A few games there. It might not be real high on anybody else's priority list unless you're a fan of that team, but a couple games there that you might just want to tune in, keep an eye on. You might end up seeing a decent college bowl game. And you know, some of these Saturdays, some of these weekdays, there might not be anything else on. Got to be alert during bowl season because you never know when you might just across a great game. As we do every single week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, our Daily Dose Top 5 this week, I got to give you some background on this. Yesterday, I was home yesterday, as was most of the metro area in Denver. Yesterday in Colorado here in the metro area, we got about a foot of snow dumped on us. And so school was canceled. Everyone was working from home. Everybody was kind of, you know, cooped up in their house all day yesterday. And so like with me, I had the family home with me. We kind of sat around and just watched, you know, some of the Christmas movies that were on throughout the day. You know, and whether you're watching some of the classics, you're watching like Christmas Vacation, or you're watching Christmas Story, or you're watching Elf, or, you know, some of these, you know, different, you know, movies that are on. They're like the big name movies. They're like, well, everybody watches, you know, the Rudolph, you know, you watch Rudolph and Santa's a jerk until he can use Rudolph for his personal gain. And Charlie Brown Christmas was on, you know, where we've got like a 6-year-old kid going through, you know, depression. That's an enlightening one. I don't know how that one got to be so big, but Charlie Brown going through depression and going to a 5-cent psychiatrist. That one was on. And so there's a few Christmas movies that it seems like every year you just kind of watch. You know, those ones that you just, I don't really go out of my way to watch them, but I end up watching them. I end up watching those same shows like every single year. Like since I was a little kid, I've seen all these exact same shows. Like you see them every year. And so I started thinking about Christmas movies in general. And yes, we went off the board a little bit this week as far as sports, but I started thinking about Christmas movies in general because there are certain Christmas movies that you might not know about. Or you might not realize that they're kind of Christmassy kind of movies. So just, and I'm telling you ahead of time, these are not all suitable for little kids. In fact, maybe one of them is suitable for little kids. But here are the Daily Dose top 5 alternative Christmas movies. When you're sick of all the regular ones, when you're sick, you've seen Christmas Vacation so many times, and yes, we know, we've seen all those a million times. They're fun to watch, but there's only so many good ones. There's only so many good ones. Let me give you the Daily Dose top 5 alternative Christmas movies, and if you haven't seen them yet, I would encourage you to do so. Number 5 on our list. I promise you this one is not suitable for kids. It definitely has some adult language. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. You may not have heard of this one. Starring Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. Downey is a small-time crook that is running from the cops. And as he's running from the cops, he ends up in an acting audition for like a mystery film. And of course, he gets the part. It's set during Christmas time. Robert Downey is just one of those guys, though, and I think he's a phenomenal actor. He's one of those guys that I don't always know if he's acting or if that's just how he is. There are certain guys in life that you look at, like Tracy Morgan. I don't know if Tracy Morgan is acting or if that's really who he is. Like, he always kind of acts like he maybe is a little bit drunk and he just kind of woke up on a street corner and I don't know if he's acting or not. There are certain guys in life that I think they're, Robert Downey Jr. is that guy. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. A very funny movie. Trust me, if you check that one out, that will become a movie that you really, really like. Number 4 on our list. Alternative Christmas movies to the regular, to the normal, to the ones you're sick of. You gotta watch Gremlins, don't you? If you don't know the story of Gremlins, maybe you heard about it back in the day, and yes, it's an older movie, but a gadget salesman finds this weird little pet for his son for Christmas. It's his Christmas present, and the pet turns out to be a little bit different than what we all thought, but some people, they look at this movie like a horror movie. It's not a horror movie. It's actually kind of a comedy. The Gremlins, yes, they might kill you with a chainsaw, but the Gremlins are creative. They also will rig your stair lift to launch you through a plate glass window. They sing songs, they dance, they swing on ceiling fans. These little imps are a riot, and Gremlins is definitely worth watching in the Christmas season. And I don't know, what is it, like PG-13 maybe? Something like that. Gremlins is a classic, you gotta watch that one. Number 3 on our list. I don't know if everyone's going to like this one, but this is definitely one of those ones that's a little bit Christmassy. You even got some Christmas music in it. You gotta watch Lethal Weapon, don't you? You gotta watch Mel Gibson before he completely went crazy. Mel Gibson, he's in this buddy cop movie where he's chasing down these drug traffickers, and it takes place during the holidays. Yeah, you gotta watch Lethal Weapon. And Gibson, just for the record, Gibson has the mullet in this, and it is magnifique. I mean, that is a moulet. It's so good. Gibson sports that mullet like no other. Yeah, you got to check out Lethal Weapon. That's a Christmas classic. Number 2 on our list. This is another classic that they have to watch. Trading Places. Trading Places. If you want to see Eddie Murphy back when he was, you know, still funny and not dressing up like every single character in the entire movie, you got to watch Trading Places. Trading Places is a phenomenal movie. Now the only, I know, cause you're probably, you're getting your hair up right now. Cause I said that he dresses up. The only one that I'm okay, the only movie I'm okay with Eddie Murphy dressing up as a bunch of different characters is, in Coming to America. He can be in as many, he can be as many characters as he wants Coming to America. He was phenomenal in that. Other than that, Eddie, just be Eddie. But this is when Eddie was still funny, and I don't know what happened to him. He started doing little kid movies, and then he stopped being as funny. But Eddie's a street hustler in Trading Places. And he's the subject of a bet by some big money Wall Street brokers. Eddie Murphy's very, very good. Trading Places, that's got to be a Christmas classic. You got to watch that one every year. I mean, Eddie Murphy's in it. It's directed by John Landis. You've got Dan Aykroyd in it. You've got Jamie Lee Curtis in it. Phenomenal movie. Trading Places, that's got to be on your list. Our number one alternative Christmas movie that you have to watch, what else could it be? What else could it be? It's got to be Die Hard. It's got to be Die Hard. Yes, it's mindless violence. But, I mean, Bruce Willis is a New York cop visiting his estranged wife at this this Christmas party that's being hosted at her company's headquarters. When this group of terrorists led by Harry Potter bad guy Severus Snape come in, and they kind of take over this plaza, and they're going to try to rob this place. And I mean, it's pretty good. A lot of mindless violence if you just want some action. If you haven't seen it, Severus Snape, he has a knack. He has a knack, both in, like in every movie he's ever been in, but in this one, he really does it. And he does it in the Harry Potter movies too. Snape has this thing where he says all his lines, but he says them like really, really slow. Like he takes forever to get through, the lines that he's going to say. Like, in one point, he's reading this note from Bruce Willis' character, and he says, "Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho." It's that slow. And he does the same thing in Harry Potter. Like, I don't know if that's like his thing as an actor. Like, in Harry Potter, he'd be like, "Turn in your textbooks to page 93. Really? You slow it down a little more. That's how you took it. But great movie. Here's the thing that I took from Die Hard, because I saw Die Hard back in the day, long ago. Here's the thing that I took from Die Hard, because Bruce Willis has like kind of these macho lines, and anytime there's like a big scene, like he says some real cool line, and he like has some real cool things that he says, and he's kind of funny, and you're kind of rooting for him. Here's the thing that I took away from Bruce Willis in this movie. Maybe I'm the only one that took this. The thing I took away from Bruce Willis smokes like a lot. Like most of his lines in this movie, he says with a heater dangling out of his face. And I'll be honest, as a kid growing up, because like I was an athlete, I was playing sports, smoking was never anything that had any appeal to me. And I know I might be a little bit different that way, but that was never, because, you know, I was an athlete. Smoking, I never really cared about. I watched Bruce Willis in Die Hard, and like every line he has, he's got like this, you know, smoke coming out of his nose and down his face, and he looks like a dragon, and he, "Welcome to the party, pal." And you're like, "Man, that's the coolest thing. I might have to start smoking just from this." And then, you know, you try it like once and you end up throwing up on your Jordans and you say, "Forget it." But still, the whole Die Hard thing, Bruce Willis can smoke the heck out of a cigarette. I will give him that. There is our top five Daily Dose alternative Christmas movies that you just might want to check out. Hey, next week on the show, we're going to be previewing, you know, take a look at some of these college bowl games, starting to look forward a little bit to these the Orange and Cotton Bowls, the big games coming up. We'll recap some of the games that have taken place. We've got the NFL playoffs. NFL playoffs, they are getting closer. After this week, we've only got two games left. We're going to take a look at the NFL season and where it's all headed to. Plus, we've got to talk a little bit of NBA. Start talking a little bit more about that every single week. Talk some college basketball as usual. We will always have our Daily Dose Top 5 like today. You never know where the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. It could go anywhere. If you get a chance, please, please, please head over to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us just a quick review. It doesn't have to be anything big. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I hope that you all have a great week. I will see you all next week, everybody.